School, I want to go skydiving, and I don't know. There's so many things. I'll go to Hawaii, go to Fiji, backpack Europe.
They always say that you should write goals down if you're going to actually accomplish them. I write my goals at work, and there's quite a few there. all of them.
A couple of goals, but they're important and valuable goals. And so I'd rather meet and work towards those than have a lot of small goals that I won't be able to achieve. So.
Did you make any goals this year, Wyatt? I just made the goal to make more money in business. I work for myself.
My goal is to be the last one in and the first one out.
If you think about it, goals are everywhere in American culture. Everywhere. They're on our posters and our calendars. They're in our New Year's resolutions and in the campaign slogans of our elected leaders. They are the entire point of any sport that requires a ball or a puck. And very often, they are the source of our biggest accomplishments. Goals for better lives are what lured America's first settlers across the Atlantic. And goals for a better society are what inspired their descendants to wrangle over their infant nation's most important goals: life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. And today, after 50 recessions, 44 presidents, a score of wars, and a dozen technological revolutions, those goals are still the compass that guides American society. Kirkland has its own compass, established by the city council and pursued every day by the city staff. When city council members began talking of goals in 2000, they wrangled. They were, after all, establishing the city's most basic values. Getting seven people to agree on just one goal that encompasses everything a community ought to be would be a challenge. In 2009, Kirkland City Council did better than that. They agreed on 10. And this is what they decided. Neighborhoods, council members said, should be active and have their own identities. Public safety should be responsive and prevention-based. The city's road should accommodate all kinds of wheels and all sizes of feet. Its paths and pipes should function efficiently and serve the city's growing population. It should protect the natural environment for today's citizens and tomorrow's generations. It should provide recreational opportunities that enhance the health of the community. The city itself should foster a vibrant business culture that represents the community's diverse needs. And at the same time, it should remove barriers to opportunities for everyone and support those in need. Its stock of housing should reflect the diversity of the community. And it should support all of these goals from predictable revenue. The city should live within its means. To ensure the prudent pursuit of these goals, the council established four underlying principles. They'd be achieved as efficiently as possible. When possible, Kirkland would leverage regional partnerships to accomplish the goals. All of the goals would protect neighborhood identities while continuing to build a better Kirkland, and progress toward them would be measurable. Kirkland employs 450 people, and everything each one of those workers does contributes in some way to one of these 10 goals. Measuring progress toward them, however, isn't as simple as profit and loss statements or victory and defeat columns. The city of Kirkland, after all, isn't in the business of turning profits or winning contests. It's in the business of service. And to gauge its performance, the city council establishes a series of measurable outcomes that reflect progress toward each of those goals. The council then sets targets for those outcomes. So how does this work? Let's take the goal of balanced transportation as an example. Ultimately, the city council wants to reduce the number of people who drive alone to work and increase the number of people who carpool or use active transportation modes, such as cycling, walking, and busing. To get more people into active transportation, the city council figures Kirkland has to make those methods of travel faster, safer, and more enjoyable. And to measure the progress, the council established outcomes. For instance, by the year 2022, 35% of all residents will use active transportation methods for all trips inside the city. And 90% of residents will be satisfied with the maintenance of the city's infrastructure used for active transportation methods. One of the ways the city has prepared for more balanced transportation is by building sidewalks to schools. By the year 2019, city council members aim to build sidewalks along all of the city's public elementary school routes. Those sidewalks, they figure, will make active transportation safer, faster, and more enjoyable to more people. More sidewalks will encourage more people to choose the sidewalk over the car, and at the same time, increase citizen satisfaction with the city's infrastructure for active transportation. So you ask, how is the city doing? The answer is quite well. By 2010, 81% of Kirkland area schools had sidewalks leading to them. By the end of 2011, the city had constructed walk routes to another 8 schools. And 84% of citizens said they were satisfied with the choices Kirkland provided for active transportation methods. To put it simply, Kirkland is well on its way. This is the system the city uses to grade its progress toward all 10 of its goals. And every year, beginning in 2010, the City Council publishes that grade report. Of course, goals are more than ideals, and they are more than a series of targets and outcomes. They are strategic aspirations, years-long accumulations of collaboration, planning, and execution. And Kirkland's ambitious goals demand the best in all of these. But these goals are also attainable, and by working toward them, Kirkland has already become, and will continue to be, a great community, a place where people want to be. That is the ultimate measure of a city's success.
You know, it's pretty walkable. It's improving.
Well, it's like here, we have make parks. The city here looked forward a long time ago and had this land set aside, so, you know, this isn't all built up here. And they did a good job on that, and that's what all cities, I think, should do.
I'm not really afraid to, I guess, walk at night with him. Like, if I go for a stroll, especially now how it gets dark at, like, 4, I'm not that concerned about it getting dark and getting home at a later time. It's just, I don't know, you know, you see the cops around and you see a bunch of families around and it just seems to be very, like, family-friendly.
It's a cool spot to live. Young people, trendy.
I love everything about it. It's nature and the city. It's very small.
I think that for the east side especially, Kirkland is a beautiful place. I love the water. I love the access to shopping and to good restaurants, and it's just fun.
I love that it's like, I feel like it's almost like a beach community. It's kind of, you know, you can walk wherever you want to go. And
compared to some of the other cities in the surrounding areas, we found that this would be like a quiet and yet comfortable and cozy place to live at.
Making Kirkland Great is a project for all of its citizens, not just the city council or city workers. So what are you waiting for? Visit kirklandwa.gov and give these goals some of your best citizen scrutiny. Are these the right goals? How can the city do better? Your city will improve because of you, but only if you get involved.
Thank you. Weather is next. Your current conditions. Today's outlook. Tonight's forecast. The 7-day forecast.
When you think about Kirkland in 2035, what do you see? When you think about our shoreline, what is your vision? When you think about the transportation needs of the city over the next 20 years, what should Kirkland invest in to best serve your lifestyle? When you think about Totem Lake Mall or the Park Place development, what are your hopes? And when you think about the future of the Cross Kirkland Corridor, what do you see? It could be a world-class regional trail that delivers bicyclists and pedestrians from around the region to places like the Houghton Shopping Center just a few blocks away. It could be a regional transportation corridor that brings the technology workers of tomorrow to the Google campus just down the tracks. Or for our children, it could be a safe route over one of the busiest streets in Kirkland to Lakeview Elementary School. It could be any of these or all of these, but we need your voice to help shape your vision. To ask and answer questions like these, this spring we went on a tour of Kirkland neighborhoods and talked to Kirkland residents. And this is what some of the residents of Everest and Moss Bay had to say about the Cross Kirkland Corridor.
A walking and a biking trail. It's very similar to the Mary Moore Trail.
Let's coexist with pedestrians, bicycles, and rail, light rail.
I think I would like it to be a nature trail of some sort. Hopefully look very green.
In the Totem Lake neighborhood, we found two residents who had a unique vision for the lake itself.
I would just do like a longer trail for people to go on a longer walk.
I think they could probably, if they're gonna be tearing down the mall right here, maybe expand the park area.
And of course, several residents had some great ideas about how to improve the mall.
More plants, more trees.
Anything like a 24-hour fitness or a theater that brings people here.
I'm not really sure why they would want to level this, because what is really wrong with it?
Residents in the Kingsgate and Juanita areas love Edith Bolton Park, but they had some great ideas on how to make it even better.
I like it the way it is. It's very, very convenient to my house. I would hope the trails could be somewhat maintained, but I'd still like it to be rustic.
We suggested a bigger shelter because we like to come here in the winter too. And that one, I mean, there's no place in it that doesn't get wet in the winter.
See, if they could just maybe make a few flower beds.
And residents of the Bridal Trails neighborhood had some innovative ideas about the future of the shopping center.
I would envision that it would eventually look like Park Place is going to look like. Maybe not quite as high rise.
It can go up. It could go way up, like 5, 15, 20 stories tall.
We'd have to move away from the model so much as each person having like a yard and that kind of thing, and have these kind of villagey spaces where it's people living in a little bit closer proximity, but perhaps having shared spaces.
I did just have one last thought, and that would be to put in a nice big pond.
In the Juanita neighborhood, we met a resident who 25 years ago had a vision for a shopping center that helped make Juanita Village what it is today, a model for urban development.
I think that we saw the potential of being able to affect change in a positive way in the neighborhood that we lived in. We wanted a place that was a wonderful environment for our kids to grow up in, but also that enhanced the city itself. Because we really believe that if the city is healthy, then we're all going to be healthy.
We weren't able to reach every neighborhood organization and every Kirkland resident, but we want to. That's why we want to reach out far and wide, everywhere we can, over the next 2 years, to hear from you as to how we can keep Kirkland one of the best small cities in America, and how we can shape it over the coming decades to make it even better. And so the city is going to be reaching out to every neighborhood and to every civic organization. We're going to be hosting forums. We'll be sending out surveys and newsletters. We'll be asking you to give us your input. Because after all, this is your vision and your future. And we need you to give us your voice to make it a reality.
Thank you.
next. Your current conditions. Today's outlook. Tonight's forecast. The 7-day forecast. Thank you.
When you think about Kirkland in 2035, what do you see? When you think about our shoreline, what is your vision? When you think about the transportation needs of the city over the next 20 years, what should Kirkland invest in to best serve your lifestyle? When you think about Totem Lake Mall or the Park Place development, what are your hopes? And when you think about the future of the Cross Kirkland Corridor, what do you see? It can be a world-class regional trail that delivers bicyclists and pedestrians from around the region to places like the Houghton Shopping Center just a few blocks away. It can be a regional transportation corridor that brings the technology workers of tomorrow to the Google campus just down the tracks. Or for our children, it can be a safe route over one of the busiest streets in Kirkland to Lakeview Elementary School. It can be any of these or all of these, but we need your voice to help shape your vision. To ask and answer questions like these, this spring we went on a tour of Kirkland neighborhoods and talked to Kirkland residents. And this is what some of the residents of Everest and Moss Bay had to say about the Cross Kirkland Corridor.
A walking and a biking trail. It's very similar to the Mary Moore Trail.
Let's coexist with pedestrians, bicycles, and rail, light rail.
I think I would like it to be a nature trail of some sort. Hopefully look very green.
In the Totem Lake neighborhood, we found two residents who had a unique vision for the lake itself.
I would just do like a more longer trail for people to go on a longer walk.
I think they could probably, if they're gonna be tearing down the mall right here, maybe expand the park area.
And of course, several residents had some great ideas about how to improve the mall.
More plants, more trees.
Anything like a 24-hour fitness or a theater that brings people here.
I'm not really sure why they would want to level this, because what is really wrong with it?
Residents in the Kingsgate and Juanita areas love Edith Bolton Park, but they had some great ideas on how to make it even better.
I like it the way it is. It's very, very convenient to my house. I would hope the trails could be somewhat maintained, but I'd still like it to be rustic.
We suggested a bigger shelter because we like to come here in the winter too. And that one, I mean, there's no place in it that doesn't get wet in the winter.
See if they could just maybe make a few flower beds.
And residents of the Bridal Trails neighborhood had some innovative ideas about the future of the shopping center.
I would envision that it would eventually look like Park Place is going to look like. Maybe not quite as high rise.
It can go up. It could go way up, like 5, 15, 20 stories tall.
We'd have to move away from the model so much as each person having like a yard and that kind of thing, and have these kind of villagey spaces where it's people living in a little bit closer proximity, but perhaps having shared spaces.
I did just have one last thought, and that would be to put in a nice big pond.
In the Juanita neighborhood, we met a resident who 25 years ago had a vision for a shopping center that helped make Juanita Village what it is today, a model for urban development.
I think that we saw the potential of being able to affect change in a positive way in the neighborhood that we lived in. We wanted a place that was a wonderful environment for our kids to grow up in, but also that enhanced the city itself. Because we really believe that if the city is healthy, then we're all going to be healthy.
We weren't able to reach every neighborhood organization and every Kirkland resident, but we want to. That's why we want to reach out far and wide, everywhere we can, over the next 2 years, to hear from you as to how we can keep Kirkland one of the best small cities in America, and how we can shape it over the coming decades to make it even better. And so the city is going to be reaching out to every neighborhood and to every civic organization. We're going to be hosting forums. We'll be sending out surveys and newsletters. We'll be asking you to give us your input. Because after all, this is your vision and your future. And we need you to give us your voice to make it a reality.
Thank you.
Weather is next. Your current conditions. Today's outlook. Tonight's forecast. The 7-day forecast.
When you think about Kirkland in 2035, what do you see? When you think about our shoreline, what is your vision? When you think about the transportation needs of the city over the next 20 years, what should Kirkland invest in to best serve your lifestyle? When you think about Totem Lake Mall or the Park Place development, what are your hopes? And when you think about the future of the Cross Kirkland Corridor, what do you see? It can be a world-class regional trail that delivers bicyclists and pedestrians from around the region to places like the Houghton Shopping Center just a few blocks away. It can be a regional transportation corridor that brings the technology workers of tomorrow to the Google campus just down the tracks. Or for our children, it can be a safe route over one of the busiest streets in Kirkland to Lakeview Elementary School. It can be any of these or all of these, but we need your voice to help shape your vision. To ask and answer questions like these, this spring we went on a tour of Kirkland neighborhoods and talked to Kirkland residents. And this is what some of the residents of Everest and Moss Bay had to say about the Cross Kirkland Corridor.
A walking and a biking trail. It's very similar to the Mary Moore Trail.
Let's coexist with pedestrians, bicycles, and rail, light rail.
I think I would like it to be a nature trail of some sort. Hopefully look very green.
In the Totem Lake neighborhood, we found two residents who had a unique vision for the lake itself.
I would just do like a more longer trail for people to go on a longer walk.
I think they could probably, if they're gonna be tearing down the mall right here, maybe expand the park area.
And of course, several residents had some great ideas about how to improve the mall.
More plants, more trees.
Anything like a 24-hour fitness or a theater that brings people here.
I'm not really sure why they would want to level this, because what is really wrong with it?
Residents in the Kingsgate and Juanita areas love Edith Bolton Park, but they had some great ideas on how to make it even better.
I like it the way it is. It's very, very convenient to my house. I would hope the trails could be somewhat maintained, but I'd still like it to be rustic.
We suggested a bigger shelter because we like to come here in the winter too, and that one, I mean, there's no place in it that doesn't get wet in the winter.
See if they could just maybe make a few flower beds.
And residents of the Bridal Trails neighborhood had some innovative ideas about the future of the shopping center.
I would envision that it would eventually look like Park Place is going to look like. Maybe not quite as high rise.
It can go up. It could go way up, like 5, 15, 20 stories tall.
We'd have to move away from the model so much as each person having like a yard and that kind of thing, and have these kind of villagey spaces where it's people living in a little bit closer proximity, but perhaps having shared spaces.
I did just have one last thought, and that would be to put in a nice big pond.
In the Juanita neighborhood, we met a resident who 25 years ago had a vision for a shopping center that helped make Juanita Village what it is today, a model for urban development.
I think that we saw the potential of being able to affect change in a positive way in the neighborhood that we lived in. We wanted a place that was a wonderful environment for our kids to grow up in, but also that enhanced the city itself. Because we really believe that if the city is healthy, then we're all going to be healthy.
We weren't able to reach every neighborhood organization and every Kirkland resident, but we want to. That's why we want to reach out far and wide, everywhere we can, over the next 2 years, to hear from you as to how we can keep Kirkland one of the best small cities in America, and how we can shape it over the coming decades to make it even better. And so the city is going to be reaching out to every neighborhood and to every civic organization. We're going to be hosting forums. We'll be sending out surveys and newsletters. We'll be asking you to give us your input. Because after all, this is your vision and your future. And we need you to give us your voice to make it a reality.
Thank you.
weather is next.
Thank you for coming. My name is Eric Shields, and I'm the City Planning Director. I'd like to welcome you to this seventh, I understand, in a series of lectures that we've been hosting for the past couple of years on issues of interest to the growth and development of the community. We've had lectures in the past on issues of quality of life, community character, a variety of other issues, and this year we seem to have focused on housing. Earlier this year, or was it late last year, we had a local architect speaking on a topic he called Honey, I Shrunk the Lot, which was really showing creative ideas of providing more housing and less space without disrupting community character. It was very interesting. And tonight we have a panel of esteemed, I'm calling them experts, I'm not sure if they would consider themselves such, but we have to consider them since they're up here on this panel. And they're going to be talking on a variety of topics, offering their perspectives on issues of how Kirkland can perhaps influence the housing that is built here to provide for at least a greater diversity of housing, including some housing that's affordable to those of lower and moderate income of incomes. So we are hoping for some interesting ideas, maybe some provocative ideas, and ones that we can then consider, and maybe they would lead to some changes that we might want to make in the way we do business as a city or as a community. And we would just have to hear what is said and consider where we might want to go from here. I might mention that the issue of affordable housing is one that the city has been concerned about for some amount of time. Jeff Clark, one of our panelists here, and I were talking about how it was maybe 10 years ago that the city formed a task force on affordable housing, and that was followed up by the city's efforts to adopt a new comprehensive plan under the requirements of the Growth Management Act, and that included requirements or policies dealing with housing, and that includes the issue of affordable housing. Following that, we adopted a strategy plan, and we have been doing a number of things to help provide for a diversity of housing. For example, the city adopted regulations which allow for a fairly liberal allowance for accessory dwelling units in single-family residential zones. Last year, we adopted revisions to our subdivision ordinance and zoning requirements, which allow for some flexibility in the dividing of single-family lots to allow for slightly smaller lots than would otherwise be allowed. And the city has participated in a group of other Eastside cities in an organization called ARCH, which is a regional coalition for housing. And through that group, we do a number of things, but one of the things we do is contribute to a trust fund, which then helps assist in the construction of low and moderate income housing. And those are just some examples, but we want to continue this discussion. And this year, the City Council has made it a high priority to really look at the issue of affordable housing. So our panelists here come at a good time when we hope to kick off a more focused effort on what more we can do to address this issue. And following our discussion tonight, we will be convening another task force, and City Council will be appointing members to that task force, and we hope to really focus on some other tangible things that we can do. And part of this, we hope, will be to address, to talk with builders and the development community to really get a sense of what some practical measures that could be done. And we'll have to hopefully get a pretty good list, put those on the table, and then engage in a community discussion about whether or not those are things we want to do and whether or not the trade-offs, if there are some and there are bound to be, whether or not those are worth it. So stay tuned for that. So without further ado, let me introduce our moderator for tonight's panel, Jeff Clark. And Jeff, I think many of you may know as a former city councilman, also a longtime member of the city's planning commission, and Jeff was on the Growth Management Commission that helped draft the comprehensive plan that I referenced earlier, and I think he was on that task force some 10 years ago dealing with the issues of housing. And Jeff is an architect by profession and understands, I think, some of the practical realities of getting things built. And I know as a planning commissioner, he was always offering the perspective of trying to bring reality into some of the dreaming that we often do. So I'll introduce now Jeff Clark, and he'll introduce the rest of the panelists.
Thank you, Rick. I'm surprised to see this many people here. The task force that Eric's referring to was literally done 10 years ago, and we had meeting after meeting and month after month, and I don't think I saw this many faces in the whole time that task force was in place. The issues haven't changed much. We still have an affordability issue. We still have problems with the same issues that we had back then, but the gap is widening. The speed at which our land is escalating the problems with which we have to deal. So it's not a new problem. It's come to the forefront. More and more people are aware of it because it has become all those things we feared 10 years ago. They haven't all struck, not as bad as they can, but they are starting to make a difference in this community. We are fortunate tonight to have three very talented people who have dedicated to this subject and have made a difference not just in this community, but throughout the region. It's something that we all need to keep in mind that it is a regional issue. The city cannot solve the problem by itself. No city can solve the problem by itself. So without further ado, with us tonight, I will introduce Mr. Mark Blatter, who is the Executive Director of St. Andrews Housing Group, which is a nonprofit organization that provides housing communities for people of financial need throughout East King County. Mark has 10 years of experience in developing affordable housing and 20 years of experience in real estate development and construction management. Prior to his current role as Director of St. Andrews, Mark was a senior housing developer for Common Ground, a nonprofit consulting group in Seattle. Please join me in welcoming Mark Blatter. Thank you. Marcia Hadley currently has a consulting practice that focuses on policy reform and innovative design for infill housing, as well as inclusive, informative community processes. She has served as Seattle Housing Development Specialist and served for two terms as a Neighborhood Design Review Board member in the city of Seattle. She has also served as Executive Director of Threshold Housing and the Housing Partnership, and she is responsible for the design work associated with the renovation of Seattle's Pine Street Cottages, which is one of the kind of the measuring sticks we use for successful housing here in the local area. She was also responsible for the development of Malden Court condominiums in Capitol Hill. Please welcome, join me in welcoming Marcia. Thank you. And last, but certainly not least, is a gentleman that has spent a great deal of time. Anybody that's involved in politics or has dealt with planning throughout this community probably has dealt at some point or another with Art. Art Sullivan is the program manager for a regional coalition of housing, which we currently refer to by the acronym of ARCH most of the time. So if you hear those four letters, that's what it's about. It's a coalition of 14 jurisdictions of East King County, including Kirkland, working to create a full range of housing through policies and direct assistance programs. Art has worked as a nonprofit, as a housing specialist for the city of Bellevue, and senior manager at a nonprofit development corporation in the San Francisco Bay Area, where he developed affordable housing for creating partnerships with local communities and or private developers. Please welcome Art Sullivan. The format for tonight is generally set out to allow some interaction with the community and the people here in the audience. We've asked each of the panelists to give us a 15-minute overview of their field and their expertise, which will be the first 15 minutes. We will then have a half-hour discussion of panelist questions that I will be asking them. And following that, we will have a half-hour of open conversation and questions from the audience directed towards the panelists. At the conclusion of that, we'll ask each of the panelists to summarize with a quick 3-minute overview of what their thoughts are and what processes might work best here in our community. And I hope you would all participate in that question and answer session. I'm sure there's more questions here than answers, and we've got a long ways to go before we get to the end of this. Before we get started tonight, one of the things that I wanted to throw out was, why is it such a big deal? Why do we care so much about housing and affordable housing? What does it mean? Why are we all here? And I would guess that a vast majority of us that have homes here don't see the need for this issue to be brought up. What's it mean to us? Who are these people that we're talking about? Who are we trying to serve with the need? And I think the answer to that is that it's us. The bottom line to all this is that we have teachers that cannot afford to live in our community. If they can't afford to live here and we have to have them live outside and come back and create more traffic, it burdens our roads, they're less likely to stay here. That's how we attract the brightest people to our businesses and our community. Where do the service workers come from? We talk a great deal in this community about saving a hardware store. And yet the people who work at that hardware store aren't making $36,000 a year. The average price of an apartment in this, a two-bedroom, two-bath apartment in this community is $1,100 a month. That means you've got to earn $36,000 or more to meet the guidelines for most lenders to fit into that. And our average house, now raw land in this community, it's 7,200 square foot lots, are pushing $120,000 to $150,000 bare land. The house they will build on that will be roughly three times the value of the land. So we're starting at $360,000 to $450,000 as our beginning house. That has a big impact on who we bring into our community, the diversity, the people we can train and keep as members of the community's business sector, and it also has a great deal for us and the impact that it makes, I should say, in the changing atmosphere of the family structure. We were all used to at one time having two parents, two kids, both parents work. That's changing. The average household now is 1.2 or 2.2 people. And it points to the fact that we've got a lot more single family, single wage earner, head of household type families. In February of last year, the Seattle Chamber of Commerce, I don't know which way this has to go, put out this brief flyer. It speaks to the issue not of affordability so much as what a typical job can afford as far as housing goes within our community, within any community. When you look at that list, those are the jobs that every community for 100 years has brought into their threshold, so to speak. It's the basic wage earners. It's the police officers, the dental assistants, the teachers, the very people that make up the fabric of your society. And if you look at that and you listen to what the panelists have to say tonight, I think you'll see a direct correlation to what our concern is in this community. We can no longer have the very people we need if they are not two family wage earners who live in this community and buy some of our lowest end housing. With that, I'm going to turn this over to Art Sullivan, who will give us our first conversation tonight. And I appreciate again all of you coming out. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to go right to the podium, right? Good evening. I'm going to try to be able to do this talking to you while doing some overheads. We were asked to think about a few questions in preparing for this evening, and a couple of those questions were, what is affordable housing? What do we think of when we hear that term? Another question was, what are some of the obstacles and opportunities for building and preserving affordable housing? And then third, what are some innovative approaches that are being done in the suburbs that might show or give you some ideas what can or could be done? I'm going to share a perspective that's based on my current position, and my current position is to work directly with local cities. And from there, cities, I feel, have a responsibility to address the entire spectrum of need for housing. Many groups will focus on one or two specific needs, but communities and their comprehensive plans, their goal is there's a wide range of needs in their community. What are we doing about those? And so that's where my perspective comes from in my current life. I've had other lives similar to Mark and Marsha's where I've had very different perspectives and focused on certain types of needs. But for this evening, and I wanted to just give you a little bit of overview very quickly, three different ways that you might think of what does affordable housing mean. The first is, in your comprehensive plan, you do show some very specific numbers, and I just wanted to put these up here for you to be able to see. You hear these terms, low income, 50% of median income. You hear moderate income, 80% of median. And then you hear median income. And these are things that cities are supposed to explicitly plan for. And when you see these numbers, you see low income means $23,000 a year to $33,000 a year under our current definitions. That means an hourly wage of over $10 an hour for a single person, or up to $15 an hour for combined. So that's one thing to keep in mind when you hear your cities debating what is affordable housing. This is the technical definition. Now, there's others who try to serve even lower, 30% of median income, but I just want to make sure you understand that. And that means rents of $500 to $750 a month. At moderate income, you're looking at incomes of $37,000 to $52,000 a year, which means affordability of $900 to $1,200 a month for rent. It could mean $100,000 to $140,000, $150,000 a year for ownership housing. Now, one of the significant things to keep in mind when you look at these figures in terms of income and affordability is approximately 40% of a normal community will have incomes under 80% of median income. That's just normal. That's what you're going to create. And then finally, median income is now $46,000 to $65,000 a year, which translates to rents could be as high as $1,500 a month. Or as low as $1,100, but still, sales prices have to be under $183,000 to be affordable in that range. So that's one way of looking at affordability. I'm going to try some high-tech thing here, see if it works. Wow, cool. Still learning. Another way to look at it, let's see if this works. It works. Pretty neat. Another way to look at it is looking at it from the point of view of what can the private sector do? What is the private sector with the rules and tribulations and trials that they're put forward to try to produce housing? Who are they able to serve? And this graph tries to illustrate that a little bit. From the point of view, it sort of says you have market rate housing, you have moderate, and you have low income households. And there's a whole income spectrum here that you can look at. And one goal for a community is to try to have market rate housing be able to meet as wide a spectrum of the housing need as possible, so that there doesn't need to be things like, you know, using your fund, your general fund dollars or things like that to create affordability. However, historically, we've had difficulty having the market rate meet all needs in a community. So one way of looking at affordability is how much can you do with the private market, and what the private market can't do without some level of assistance or encouragement. That could be one way of looking at affordable housing. And actually, I just briefly mentioned, what I'm showing here is sort of like a plan. And that is, what can cities do in a wide spectrum? They can do things to try to make it that the market can do more. They can try to encourage higher density. They can lower fees. They can do density bonuses, or they can allow higher density housing. But there are also more direct means, and as you can see from this list, things like direct financial support, providing funding, doing home repair loans for low-income homeowners. So that gives you an idea of some options. A third way to look at affordability is to look at, I want to show one other thing, and that is when you're working as a community, and I said you look at the need, not only do you look at an income need, but you need to look at a household need. There are a wide range of types of households in communities throughout the county. And what's interesting is looking at 1990 census data, there is as much diversity. That's interesting. There is as much diversity in terms of household types in Kirkland as there is countywide averages. In other words, only 20% of households are single or married couples with children in this community. Another 25% are married without children. You have one-person households is the largest segment type of households in your community, and that's another issue. Wow, this is really cool. Let's get this out of here. Got to get you all dizzy here. So, but the point is, there is a wide variety, not only in terms of income, but in household types and needs, seniors, young families, etc. The final point that I wanted to show, another way of looking at affordability, is that Arch, last year, went out and talked to people in the community. We say, do we care? Do you care about this issue? We didn't go out with any ideas. We just said, is this an issue for you? And one of the things that came out of this is people seem to think it matters, but they're also very concerned with how it would be done. And so one of the things that we've incorporated into our philosophy is there is a right way to do affordable housing working with communities. And so this is a list of some of the values that we got, not by me sitting down at the table with people like Mark and Marcia, but sitting down with groups like you. We talked to over about 100 people and just asked them, What's right? If you're going to do this, how do you do it right? So you see, there should be a variety of solutions. The community should be more aware. So we're here doing events like this. We need to partner with the community, which means the cities and the government and the business community all need to work together. We should be contributing to stability, and not only stability for residents, helping them have, you know, be able to afford their housing and afford other expenses, but we also need to lend stability to the existing community. That means having the architecture integrate well. People should have a choice to live near where they work or near their family. There should be a broad sharing of responsibility, and don't create old-style affordable housing, sort of the public high-rises that people often think of. And hopefully you're going to see tonight there are a lot of ways of meeting these goals and values, but this is something that we've incorporated in any work that we will do in the future. This is what we're going to look at. This is where we're going to start, is start with the community and make sure the housing works for the community. So those are three perspectives on what is affordable housing. The next point I want to touch briefly on is that there are, you know, what are some obstacles? And I'm going to offer just one. Local government can be both an obstacle and an opportunity. So there, that's what ARCH is all about. That's what was identified when ARCH was created. The city said, there was a citizens task force. They got together and they said, what do we need to do to create more affordable housing? And their conclusion was, we need to have government do their job better. And what that meant was, and what they realized, is that small jurisdictions have trouble in two areas in particular. One is staffing expertise, people who specialize in working on housing issue, and the other is getting enough of a resource base to provide direct assistance. And so ARCH was created to work on issues that cities historically have done pretty well in larger cities because they have the resource base, but that by working together, we could efficiently, in smaller jurisdictions, work together and address needs. And what we identified as a primary way of success was not necessarily our success, but the success of organizations in our community. If they're succeeding, then we are setting up an environment in which allows them to succeed. And that's our primary goal, is create affordable housing, which can be measured as much by the units we created, as much as by the support system in communities, both private sector and nonprofit, to create affordable housing. So now I want to briefly show a few slides to illustrate. I guess I need this up. Oh, do we need to turn this off? Do you know how to turn this off? I'm going to try to give you four examples of things other than what I hope that Marcia and Mark are going to talk about. The first is utilizing surplus land. Cities can use all or a portion of underutilized land in order to help create affordable housing. This is create affordable housing.